The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guests on Off the Shelf are from Booz Allen Hamilton's Strategic Innovation Group. Joining me are Greg Wentzel, he's Executive Vice President at Booz Allen Hamilton, Julie McPherson, a Senior Vice President, and Bill Ott, a Vice President. And that's the last time, guys, I'm going to go through your presidencies or your vice presidencies, okay? And you guys are all part of the, as I understand it, the digital solutions team within the Booz Allen Strategic Innovation Group. Can you talk a little bit about that group and your team and what you guys are doing to start the show?
Sure. Thanks, Roger, for having us. So the last 4 years, we've been on the journey at Booz Allen where we're setting up the Strategic Innovation Group to reignite our innovation across the whole firm. Within it, there's four teams doing engineering, cyber technologies, analytics, and digital, which is the new modern IT. And that is the team you have before you. We lead that across the firm.
Right. And when you're talking about digital services in the context of government, what does that cover? I have my idea that it's everything that's integrated from your phone to your laptop, to whatever, but I'd like to hear your description of it.
Yeah, we're kind of unifying our team is where we are taking the latest in the social, mobile, analytics, and cloud technologies, focusing on the new unique user experiences on mobile and web devices, and then delivered through a DevOps process, and it rides on a cloud on the back end.
Right. And in that regard, what I think in looking at what you guys are doing, you're trying to get the government to the point where it's acting like, I guess an innovative tech company, right? And operating it with regard to its management of its data. That's a big task.
Yeah.
As someone who worked in the government for 20 years. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Roger. I think digital is really about helping the government, reach the citizen, reach their workers, reach the military in new ways that weren't possible before these digital technologies. So it's really about improving internal processes, saving money. But at the end of the day, it's really about increasing the value that the government provides to its constituents.
Right. Well, and your measuring stick is top tech companies. So Right. Can you talk a little bit about, Julie, a little bit about what some of these top, what are some of the key characteristics or, aspects of top tech companies and and their success?
Thanks, Roger. Absolutely. And we think about this all the time in the work that we do. We spend most of our time working in the federal government, but Booz Allen also has a growing presence in the commercial market, which is pretty exciting to be able to pull from some of those sort of best practices that we're seeing in the commercial industry and really reflect on how those trends can be applied to the government. So there are a few of them I'll talk about, and my colleagues, I'm sure, will chime in as well. One of the things center most, I think, in the strategies that we see is really about the people, identifying the right sorts of people that are going to mash up with your culture and the vision that you have for the organization. And really, the war for talent is such a central part to this digital transformation, getting the right people, taking care of the right people, harnessing the power that they can bring to the equation. And that's certainly something, again, we see often in the commercial market where, the talent is courted from really incredible organizations to move to other incredible organizations because they realize they're central to the story. Another trend also, that I think our commercial brethren are often a bit ahead of many government organizations is really the thought processes and the use of social media. How do you think about using social media to the advantage? And I to the advantage of whatever your mission is. And you know, oftentimes we think about social media for marketing, and government organizations don't necessarily, you know, initially embrace the idea that they also, too, have to connect with their, as Bill said, stakeholders, constituents, warriors, and citizens, and provide clear channels of communication back and forth with them. I also think, you know, the use of social media as it connects with right talent, creating the kind of environment where millennials today want to work, right? They're 25% of our workforce, growing to 75% of our workforce in less than 10 years. And so making sure we're creating an attractive environment for them, I think, is pretty critical.
Go ahead, sorry. Yep. So, Bill, a little bit, you know, when you talk about social media and then we've got the people, that's two pieces of it. But you guys also talk about a digital ecosystem. I say ecosystem.
Right. We've heard it always. Yeah.
What is that? Can you talk a little bit about what successful companies do in contrast to the government and that ecospace?
I can, Roger. Thanks. You know, it used to be not that long ago when you did IT, you would go out and buy a product or two or build it from scratch, and you would have everything self-contained within your organization. Well, that's all changed, as you mentioned, with the digital ecosystem. There's so many products and services and vendors and partners out there that today it's really about understanding all of that ecosystem and the components. When you're thinking about what solutions to create and provide to your customers or your constituents, it's how do you leverage what's already out there so you don't have to pay for it again, and then focus your scarce resources on what doesn't exist already so that you can really maximize your return to your constituents.
And is part of that the going to the cloud?
It is.
As a way to save?
The cloud, in my mind, is kind of the underlying glue that ties all of this ecosystem together.
Right.
Roger, just to add on there, that's a good example. So in an ecosystem, things work in harmony, right? So what's happening is instead of the big bang IT where you would normally build things in a silo with scraps, the private sector knows how to take advantage of each other and play to their strengths. So your example on the cloud, in the past, we would go buy a set of servers, stand them up, run those ourselves. And now the whole cloud energy is I'm just buying it by the drink. I'm buying it like I would buy my electricity, right? So somebody else, a preferred vendor, is focusing on providing that infrastructure as a service. And then I focus my resources on my core competency, whether it's building the Uber app or things like that, that then ride on the cloud.
Right. And along those lines, when I think about that, I think, and you mentioned silos, I mean, the government is still filled with silo after silo. Is that one of the biggest challenges they face, Greg?
Yes. Yeah. So that when you translate, you see the economies of the ecosystem, and it's obviously an interesting buzzword, but it's the reality how the private sector works together. The federal procurement process is divided, right? You know, there's money starts at the top. Their tax dollars are distributed across multiple agencies of which they, you know, will in turn buy their things. So the thing that we see is the federal government, if they can start operating more like an enterprise and an ecosystem where they are converging on, okay, we're going to have this particular agency provide the cloud for the rest of the agencies, and that's where their dollars will go. And then, you know, a health group will not stand up any infrastructure. They'll just build the digital mission solutions that can ride on the cloud, right? So that's where we're starting to go through that journey with them and, you know, helping them start operating like an enterprise or ecosystem across the federal government.
Can I follow up on the silo really quickly?
Sure, Bill.
So another aspect to the silo, I mean, if you think of a lot of the government websites today, they're organized by the silo, not by the user need,
right,
which gets to the third area that I think that top tech companies put user experience first. And they they devise their strategy around that user need, not by how they're organized, but by that user experience need.
Right. And well, in other areas that I think companies that I'd get, like get your thoughts on it, is data and how, you know, the use of data. I think government, from my experience, especially over the last few years, thinks data is really important.
Right.
They probably always have, but I don't think they view it as strategic. They're starting to as strategically as companies do. Is that fair, Julie?
I think that's a great observation, and it's been one that is getting more and more acute, really, as new data types are showing up on the market and the volume of data is just really increasing exponentially. You know, spending time, some of my time in the health market, we work closely with the Food and Drug Administration. And when they're evaluating new drugs for approval on the market, they're no longer getting traditional drug applications that come in, right? They're getting very complex profiles that often have genetic nature to the data types that are coming in. And when you start thinking about volumes of data and being able to transmit that data, store that data, analyze it, make sense out of it, you know, the need has always been there, but it's becoming acute and it's becoming a problem that everyone really just cannot ignore anyway anymore. And which creates an exciting opportunity to really say, hey, you know, how do we think very differently about the way that we are making decisions? And how can we tap into what's already existing in industry instead of trying to rebuild our own? So a little bit like Bill said, instead of spending time building things that have already been built, really spending time, you know, addressing the core functions that we're that our organizations and missions are facing.
Right. So, and guys, we have to take our break. My guests today are Greg Wenzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They're all with Booz Allen Strategic Innovation Group, the Digital Solutions team. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion and talk about strategies the government can employ to adopt some of these best practices that commercial tech firms utilize to deliver value to their customers. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Greg Wenzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They're all with Booz Allen Hamilton Strategic Innovation Group, working in the Digital Solutions team. And guys, in the first segment, we talked a lot about, you know, what successful high-tech companies do with regard to their key strategies and practices, and your goal or the dream of being able to, you know, see the government adopt those same practices to deliver better digital services to the constituencies and the whether it's the citizens or the warfighter or whoever. So let's talk a little bit about that, and how do you translate some of those best practices in the high tech world for those successful companies to the government space? And I start with you, Greg. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Roger, thanks. One observation is when you look at the private sector versus the public sector, the private sector, they're building new systems from scratch to create some new innovations. The federal government has been building systems for decades, right? And what they're running into is what we call the unsustainable enterprise. They are spending probably 70-80% of their budget on maintaining what they got. You know, it works, but the issue is as the technology has matured, they're looking to take advantage of the new technologies, the social, the cloud move, and it's trying to go through that balance of how can they shift money over to, you know, setting up a new cloud while they're paying money to maintain the servers that they currently have. So that's what we find is a pretty substantive shift in where they need to go.
Right. Well, Bill, that seems to me that's the where the government's going, right? To the cloud. I mean, that's right. It seems to me it's the chief cost-effective way to modernize your system without having to make all the investments and own all the stuff yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is. It is very fair. And Roger, one way I think about it is, you know, Greg mentioned a lot of these startups and these new companies, they're starting from scratch. They have that luxury, and the federal government does it. But also, there's a lot of, you know, commercial organizations that are large that have been around pre the internet days, and they also have a similar problem. Is, you know, they've got a lot of legacy systems that they need to modernize as well. So, and there is a lot of talk about, oh, let's just move to the cloud. But that's a lot easier said than done. And I think there's a big difference in understanding of what that really means. So one way I think about it is it's not about just picking up an app and dropping it in the cloud, because that really doesn't take advantage of the power of the cloud. You'll be able to get a little bit of cost savings there. But the true power of moving something to the cloud is really looking for opportunities to increase your business process or make your business process more efficient. Look for new means to reach new customers and new value while you're moving things to the cloud. So it's really taking a step back and looking at what you're trying to accomplish while you're moving things to the cloud, and not just doing it from a technology for technology's sake, but looking at it from a mission-driven or a business value perspective.
Right. So you're looking at your business processes, Julie, right, and seeing how they relate to, you know, your where you're going technologically in terms of where you're going to the cloud, and taking advantage of that transition period to try to, you know, so you're talking really both things, right? It's not just technology; it's also how you're organized as an entity to deliver those services, and gives you that look. Is that?
That's 100% spot on. And we had a debate earlier this week actually talking about the difference between digital modernization and digital transformation. And, you know, one mindset is when you're modernizing, you know, there's a notion that that could apply just to the technology, right? Let's get in there. Let's apply a DevOps technique to be able to give us more agility with the solutions that we take. Let's deploy it on a cloud platform. But, you know, in my opinion, when you wrap around it all of the business model transformations and rethinking the products that you're delivering and how you deliver them, to me, that's when you sort of transition from modernizing what you have to truly transforming the business that you're in. And it does require, you know, rethinking business models and people and incentives and programs, not just the technology play. And I often see organizations really tackling the technology problem, and they get benefit, they get value out of that. But it's usually most transformative when you can wrap the business model changes around it as well.
And is the key to that, Greg, the people? That, I mean, investing in the right people, having the right people within the government, and also those who are supporting the government to provide those solutions?
Yeah, I mean, the people are the key ingredient that actually binds us all together, right? From the technologists that we need to, as Julie described, the process. We need folks that think a little bit differently and may think outside of the box, and as we would say, you know, think like an enterprise. So when people are the new technologists are developing a piece or component of this thing, you know, where they ask the question, where do we plug into the larger enterprise? And, hey, can I make this available to others across the enterprise? So people and talent is critical. And having some of the call it the next generation that actually is embracing these technologies, get engaged in recruiting that type of talent is, you know, a big challenge for both, you know, the government and even us, you know, on the industry side.
Hey, Roger, quick follow. I read somewhere recently a quote that I really resonated with me. It was, the leading companies don't do digital, they act digital. So I think when we talk digital, we often just, we talk a lot about the technologies, but that quote resonates a lot with me because digital is all about the people. It's all about the culture, and that the kind of the, and Julie mentioned, you know, business models and management models, you know, leading companies today view digital as a new way of operating, which is, you know, focused on empowering teams, not hierarchies. It's all about collaborating and working across silos and boundaries. And also with cross-functional, you know, you make sure you have the business and the mission people side by side with the tech people and the operation people and all working together. It's also about experimentation and trying new things and what works, build off of that. What doesn't work, learn from that and move on. And then and lastly, it's really from a people point of view about emphasizing continual learning, because things are moving so fast. If you don't stay up and, you know, then you'll get, in behind. So it's continual learning.
Well, Julian, when you talk about Bill mentioned things moving so fast, but one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is that user experience and that user expectations, and tech companies, try to address that, with updates and understanding. You guys talked about in the first segment the user experience and the focus on that imperative. And ultimately, that is how you get more business, right? The government, how is the government reacting to that? It seems to me, you mentioned, Julia, millennials too, and, and their expectations, and just things seems to change so quickly for an old guy like me that how does the government stay on top of that?
Yeah, I think it's exciting, actually, to see the government react and respond to that. I mean, the fact is, our lives are driven by the expectations that we now have in our day-to-day experiences, right? I confess, on the way over here, I picked up my iPhone, I ordered a car dropped me off at the door. That experience is really transparent. It's easy. Nobody had to train me on how to do that. That's the expectation that everyone has in their personal lives, and that transcends into their work experiences. And so they're expecting that experience when they interact with the government. It should not be a heroic activity to find out the status of your tax claims. Mm-hmm. The IRS has done an amazing job in transforming the way that they actually provide transparency into the status of your tax claims and processes.
And in addition, it is all about creating this great experience, but I think especially important also in the government, user experience actually saves money. We spent a lot of time in the past building things and, creating software that users might not have needed or didn't want. So if you focus on the experience and what users really need, then you don't waste your time building something, again, that they don't need. Another example where user experience saves money is if the government can provide a great experience online, well, then that means less people are going to go to call centers and in-person centers, and so which are much more expensive than delivering a service online.
I think, I'm thinking of your description of the user experience. It seems to me, I just think that the government, in many instances for years and years, focused on its process.
Right.
And how it was supposed to comply with whatever it was supposed to do, rather than focusing externally and how they could make it a better experience for their constituencies. And I think that's, to your point, I think that's starting to change, and it is exciting. My guests today are Greg Wentzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They're with Booz Allen Hamilton's Strategic Innovation Group, the Digital Solutions team. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about these strategies, in particular how you recruit and retain these millennials, and I think we'll also talk about centers of excellence in the government and how that strategy may move the digital transformation or modernization or both forward in the federal government. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guests are Greg Wentzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They're with Booz Allen Hamilton Strategic Innovation Group, the Digital Solutions team, and we've been talking about digital services today, strategies for the government to try to mirror high-tech companies. And the last segment, indicated I was going to talk a little bit about people and recruiting people, but before we get to that, I wanted to go back and talk about, the big issue there's been a lot of focus on, there will continue to be, and we talked a little about it last segment as well, but I think that we can examine it a little bit more, and that is, this legacy systems challenge that the government faces with 80% of the dollars going to maintain what's already been in place. And Greg, I know you had some thoughts on that and some of the strategies the governments can and will or may employ to try to address that and save some money.
Yeah, Roger. So the thing that we're seeing is when, the government is on the uptake for some of these private sector innovations, but instead of just flipping from their old technology to now this new technology, we're seeing what they need to do is probably open up their current systems and start, focusing on building on top of an open platform. And what we mean by that is, if you're familiar with the whole open source rage, you know, there's a great community that is leveraging and sharing and building on top of that. But some of the systems in the past, or quite a few, you know, there could have been this, call it tightly large monolithic bundled solution that in some cases could very well have been proprietary, and they can't unlock it. So if they're able to start by opening up their current existing platforms and turning that into an open platforms with things like open APIs, using open source, things like that, that begins to unlock the pieces and parts that they have traditionally bundled together. And that begins the journey that then they can reassemble, you know, and bring in the unique innovators in a particular space, and many of them. They get effectively, like a marketplace. They start creating a marketplace for their solution and get the wisdom of the innovations, not just a single procurement.
Right. Does that also reduce risk for the government? When you described it, I was thinking about, it sort of lends itself to a modular approach rather than trying to figure out a spec to replace an entire system. Is that one of the aspects of it?
Exactly. That's the beginning of the journey. So when you have this open platform with these open APIs, you can, instead of one large procurement, send out multiple procurements, and that's what we're finding. More smaller things network together is this digital ecosystem, and taking the large monolithic and break it into smaller pieces that allows them to accelerate development and get more things faster, get successes quicker, which builds the momentum, as Bill was talking, with the user experience. It just begins the transformation when we say start with that open platform.
So, and Roger,
yes, Bill?
It's not typically feasible for an agency to rewrite an entire application. Like you said, risk. It's very risky often cases. So what we see some of the leading and the best practice organizations do, I think Martin Fowler termed it's called the strangler pattern, which essentially is you look across your entire environment and identify, in all your systems, if you have $1 to spend, what can you spend it on that's going to either save you the most money or make the most impact from your mission or business perspective? And then what you do is you pick off that small piece of all of the portfolio and modernize that small piece. And over time, you keep on doing that until the time where, at one point, an application, all of the features will be modernized. And at that point down the road, you'll be able to retire that legacy asset.
Right. And is that one of the questions I wanted to ask about when in the break, you mentioned reuse. Is that part of reuse, or what is reuse?
I think reuse is actually making things into bite-sized chunks so that they are reusable. When you have a sort of a fully functioning system, oftentimes it's really customized to what sort of the mission is. But if you can pull that system apart into its bits and pieces, you'll find there is a high percentage of commonality across every system that's built today in the government and candidly in industry. And so this movement around reuse is in really encapsulating these functions and features and making them accessible to the world, whether it be your organization or the industry that you're working on, so that they don't, again, have to build it themselves. Okay. They can just add it to their portfolio. And that's, I think, a pretty central component of what we call digital nirvana. It's where you sort of assemble from what already exists in the enterprise. Maybe 80% of what you need to do has already been built, and then you spend your time and energy kind of gluing together those functions and features and building the 20% of uniqueness that you need for your mission.
And Roger, just to build on that, what we're not saying anything that is like revolutionary. For example, the reuse thing.
Sure.
That's called open source.
Okay.
Right? I mean, industry, and on GitHub, there's so many things that industry, private sector industry is reusing, that we're just saying, can we do that in the federal government where they open up, unlock, and there's really cool components and things and services that the government has already built that they can make available to their other federal colleagues.
Right. And how does this government, one of the things that we're seeing today are these centers of expertise or centers. I'm thinking about, GSA created the Technology Transformation Service. Is that the strategy that, companies employ when they're trying to get to the same place?
Yeah.
Is the government doing a good job mirroring that?
I think, Roger, what we're seeing is you can't become digital overnight and transform your entire organization.
Some of us, like myself, can't. We'll never get there.
You mentioned Center of Excellence. What we see is organizations starting small. So they'll handpick a select, group of folks, put them into a Center of Excellence, or in Target, they actually call it a dojo, the idea of getting people together and working together. And then, start small, bring together these folks to test out these new processes, these new approaches, and then demonstrate some success, and then slowly build from that success over time. And then over time, it really permeates the broader organization. And we're also seeing that in the federal government as well, as you mentioned, in GSA and in other agencies too.
Right. So, when you think about open source and centers of excellence and reuse and all these things, is this like getting to the digital ecosystem you guys have talked about in the first segment, or not?
Yeah, this is part of the digital ecosystem, and the rate and change of the digital ecosystem is really sort of mind-blowing, right? If you think about the skill sets, the technology, the products, the methods, the new business platforms that are evolving, they're really all parts of this ecosystem that we talk about. And it's exciting when you step back and you sort of put a map around talent, and we'll just focus on the United States. There are centers of excellence where people with specific skill sets are really forming around in different parts of the country. And one of the places, for example, is, Austin, Texas, where we have a center of excellence, and there's a lot of creative professionals down in that area, and really figuring out how to tap into that community and not try and think about relocating them into the Washington, D.C. metro area where it's nice and cold today, but really thinking about where those natural centers are organically being created and trying to harness them instead of trying to recreate them, build them, or transition them over time.
Is talent the biggest issue the government has and being able to attract? Is that the biggest in terms of this transformation? You got the legacy systems, you've got stuff there, but
I think at
really
the core it fundamentally has to be, right? I mean, there's certainly always layers of challenges here, but I know there was an annual CIO survey recently that said 65% of them said that hiring challenges are really hurting the industry, right? And that's up significantly just year over year, I think six percentage points just year over year in terms of the criticality of talent and a skill base to actually knit all of these, creative and new concepts together with a focus on increased output and value at the end of the day.
It's also in the government today, people are extremely risk averse and they don't want to be on the front page of the Post or
right.
on the radio.
Right. You're absolutely right.
But to do digital, you have to take, smart, calculated risks, try different things, try experiments, fail and then, live and learn. So I think it's talent, but it's also a cultural thing about, shifting your mindset to really, push the envelope and not be so, risk sensitive.
just building on it, in the federal government's defense, we understand there's this procurement process, and the federal acquisition regulations on how they buy IT, and they're going through that journey to try to modernize it. How do I buy more smaller things rather than the large couple hundred million dollar contracts? So they're still operating within some of those constraints. And as Bill says, you know, some leads, you know, leading forward that, you know, trying those things, like they established the U.S. Digital Service.
Yes.
And then the GSA 18F on agile teams, which are like parachuted in to kind of start doing these agile concepts. So we're seeing the beginning of it, and it's going to take a while. But here's the other, you know, having been a federal, you know, a PM, program manager, right?
Sure.
You know, traditionally you're measured on cost, schedule, and performance.
Right.
And when you try to convert to the ecosystem where you're relying on somebody else and trusting that that service will be available, that introduced risk. Yeah. And so I, as a program manager, did not want out. I wanted to have organically control of everything. And that's the mindset that we think they need to shift to, as you were describing earlier, you know, call it a federal ecosystem where they can actually shift over to reusing other people's stuff as a service, and it's not organically built within my contract.
Hey, Roger.
And on schedule, Scott, we've got to keep on schedule.
All right.
So we do have to take the next break. My guests today are Greg Wentzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They're all with Booz Allen Hamilton Strategic Innovation Group, Digital Solutions Team. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of the government digital ecosystem. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guests are Greg Wentzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They are with Booz Allen Hamilton Strategic Innovation Group, the Digital Solutions Team. And we're talking about the government's digital ecosystem. I said that correctly.
You did.
I always screw that up. so I feel good. We talked about open source risk and that sort of thing, but there's a flip side of risk, and that's incentives. And Julie, can you talk a little about incentives and how important those are?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we think about any transformation, government, industry, private, it's got to be really lined up against the right incentives. The behaviors you're going to sort of affect are going to be driven by what the incentives and the motivations are. And when I think about, you know, some of the things the government will really have to adopt is a leadership commitment at the top to stay the course on some of these more creative, more innovative strategies to mission solution. And the balance has to be against, you know, a no risk. Hey, my mission is being performed well today. I don't want to change anything because candidly that introduces risk, right?
Right.
But the flip side is, yeah, but if I try these new things, if I introduce a DevOps mechanism, if I change my channel strategy so I'm engaging with people through social channels or chatbots or new techniques, I can actually save money and really move the mission down the court in a different direction. And so getting leadership commitment is absolutely fundamental to affect this digital transformation that we're all talking about. And it takes courage to do that. And we see that across the federal government. We see leaders standing up and trying new things and willing to break glass and really sort of brave new areas.
Right. And Bill, when we think about leadership and where the government's going, you know, in this last segment, I wanted to make sure we got to talk a little bit about the Internet of Things and what's that all about and what does that mean for government? What does it mean for all of us, where things are going and how that is becoming a bigger and bigger part of the ecosystem?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, Roger. So I think when we think digital today, I think most of us think of digital in terms of, you know, online, whether it's your web or your mobile device, maybe your tablet. You know, right around the corner is, you know, digital is going to be much more than that. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be in the physical world, and it will continue to be in the online world. So that's really being driven by the Internet of Things. So we're going to have sensors, and we're going to have machines, the machine intelligence, and, you know, connecting all these things together. So from a government point of view, you know, we can think of smart cities, smart cars. We can think of smart soldiers in a way and down the road. So really, you know, how's the government going to embrace that and leverage all these, you know, technologies to really, you know, again, it's all about increasing, delivering new, better value to their constituents.
So and you, along those lines, when you think about that, if you're in the, you know, if you're in a tech company, you're thinking, you know, what's the next thing? And one of the things that they're mentioned is, you know, new features, new capabilities. Where's the government in that sort of future think? What's your view of that? How is the government doing with regard to thinking about where it needs to be, you know, even 2 years from now, let's say?
So just building on Bill's example of smart cities, what's interesting in the past that when in the digital ecosystem, even though it's now, I mean, we're able to create things like, you know, Uber and Waze, right? That allowed us to get better navigation, easier, you know, geo-orientation, and disrupted the transportation services industry, right? But they were able to do that on their own. When you go into the IoT and a smart city, if you use that latest acronym buzzword, you know, it can't go it alone, right? So a city is a government municipality. And so this is where it feels like the government can meet, the public sector can meet the private sector. We're going to need to, how do you set up the infrastructure in the city that allows you to have these smart, you know, fill in the blank, right? That's right. What we're seeing. So Department of Transportation connects with a state and local government to set up, you know, these Wi-Fi spots and things like that, that allows industry to plug in. So these, that's where your ecosystem starts expanding even more. And, you know, we're, I think the government will meet the private sector.
Right. Well, Julie, just along those lines, that's a great description of, you know, the role government plays. Is one of the keys moving forward this idea of openness between government and industry to, you know, as technology continues to change and that back and forth and engagement? Is that?
Yeah, I think back to the ecosystem, our favorite term today. I think that this digital age is really truly blending the lines between organizations and products and markets in ways that we've really never thought about before, right? The competition dynamic fundamentally changes when instead of competing with somebody, you're sharing ideas so that you can each differentiate in the right way. And I think that the government can certainly benefit by thinking about that in the same way. Where do we partner up instead of thinking about creating lines? It's following the blurriness and recognizing there are all sorts of rules and regulations that have to be kept in mind. But I think that's an exciting component of sort of where the future can be when we think about public and private and the government and commercial organizations going forward.
So we have time for one more question. And so and that idea of government and industry, but at the same time, the government still has to overcome, like agencies have to be able to talk to each other, right? Even departments and that sort of thing. It's that's horizontal, you know, rather than stovepipe. And is that again a question of leadership? And so the government's almost got to try to deal with both, because there's still way too many stovepipes within government. At the same time, it's got to engage in the real world, you know, the big digital ecosystem, right? How does that, you know, is that the biggest challenge? Those two combined, is that sort of the biggest challenge you see, other than everything else we've talked about?
Just those two?
Breaking down silos and being a meaningful member of this digital ecosystem, right? Like, I think we have to think about ourselves as all being in. It's not like we're on the outside looking in. Everyone's in the middle of this, right? Yeah. And I do think that the notion of the silos that we operate in, look, they're, you know, that's to think that we're going to break down all the silos overnight is not realistic. But to think about, you know, how technology can become the bridges across some of these silos that exist in the organization, I think is a great sort of baseline starting point to be able to share the platforms, to share the data, and that over time, those relationships will strengthen, trust will develop because the bridges are being set today.
And I'll also add that We talked about strong leadership, but mm-hmm. we also talked about millennials. And I think, you know, millennials are digital natives. You know, digital natives view the world differently. They view the world horizontally versus vertically. And they're really driven by values. So as more of these folks come into the federal government because they love the mission that the government's trying, I mean, more and more of this will become natural and these walls will naturally come down.
Well, with that, guys, I want to thank you for being on the show. My guests today, Greg Wentzel, Julie McPherson, and Bill Ott. They're with Booz Allen Hamilton's Strategic Innovation Group, Digital Solutions Team. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf. Only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.